I'm Matthew Maurer, and this is joint work with my advisor, David Brumley. We're presenting Tachyon, a tool for efficient live patch testing. So basically, you've got an unpatched program, and eventually a patch comes out. And now we've got this window, which is commonly known as the vulnerability window, which is the difference between when the patch is released and when the patch is actually applied. And you're going to get exploits that are going to happen within that window. So the obvious thing that you'd want to do in order to solve this problem, at least partially, is you want to shrink that window, which essentially means you want to apply the patch faster. However, you've got a conflicting goal, which is that generally when a patch comes out, you don't want to install it immediately without knowing that it's not going to wreck something else. So for example, in this case, the applications are going along, receive, they get a query, query goes back to the program, they do some file IO, and now the patch program suddenly sends a parse error, and the unpatched program is sending 42. Now, this would be an example of a functionality problem that could be introduced in a patch, and this is the reason why people would like to not necessarily patch immediately. So this kind of deviation is essentially what we are attempting to detect. So to recap, the two goals that are sort of conflicting here is that we want to patch quickly, but we also want to avoid any unexpected behavior in the patch. So the basic common approaches to this problem are, well, we could just immediately patch. We could wait and see, which essentially means in order to avoid the unexpected behavior, you let other people immediately patch. You figure out what their experience was. Or we can do manual testing or pre-production. So with manual testing, you have the basic problem where when you're in test mode, you come up with some set of queries, and you think that these mostly probably cover your inputs. But literally any query that is not in your input set, you do not know what that program is going to do on that query, which means that if you've poorly captured your input set, if you've forgotten an input, long list of problems where you could end up still having an issue when you install the patch. The other option is pre-production, and this is actually kind of a great option. The idea here is that you actually allow a second copy of your entire infrastructure to run with this new software in order to actually understand what the changes are going to be in practice. However, this means that you have to have a separate copy not just of the program, but of the surrounding operating system and all the programs it interacts with. So if you've got an SQL server, that's going to have to be duplicated as well. All of the programs are going to have to be duplicated, which means you're going to have to double provision everything. You're going to have to come up with additional staff. It's kind of a disaster. The other half is that you have these duplicated effects. And essentially, the problem there is that you're going to end up needing to be very careful that effects don't leak out into the real world from your pre-production system. Otherwise, any kind of data that you're pumping through there could actually have unfortunate consequences, like it could be charging money instead of sending mail. Sending mail is a sort of benign example. So this gives us some basic requirements for what we actually want this to do. We want it to be automatic because we want to avoid all of this sort of manual hand-waving and guessery that's going on in a lot of these other methods. We want it to work on real inputs because it's difficult to actually ensure that you're characterizing the data and getting all of the inputs, so we actually want to run on the real data as it's being used. We want no duplication of effects, that we don't have to carefully try to make sure that stuff that happens in this world doesn't leak out to the real world. And we want it to be cheap and safe for the obvious reasons. Tachyon does achieve all of these. So the basic abstraction we're going to use to talk about this is the idea of a stream of system calls. So basically, you take the input and the output and you pair them into these little blocks, and then you've got the time going down in this picture. So you can then take them and you line them up. Now, in this case, when they did those first two queries, the programs looked like they were doing the same thing. It looked like they were doing fine. It's only in that last system call where we start to see the problem. So essentially what we're going to be doing is going to be lining up these streams and trying to get them to do the same thing. So normal Tachyon operation looks roughly like this. Basically, both programs made the same system call. The live program's system call is actually serviced by the operating system, and the replay's system call is instead serviced with the result from the system call that the live made. The next version is rewrite operation. So basically what's going on here is that the replay version is going to make a different system call, but it's something that could be semantically equivalent. They could proceed to make multiple read 128 calls and add up to that original read 256 call. So at this point, Tachyon is going to go ahead and it's going to ask the rewrite engine, I've got a system call that looks like this. I've got a system call that looks like this. Is there any way that we can make these match? And so then the rewrite engine is actually going to come up with 128 bytes of data as the response, because essentially it's just going to go ahead and it's going to truncate it. When we get to the rewriting section of this talk, I'll explain in more detail how it actually makes sure that it actually does the other half of the read as well. So then it can actually service the system call with that information, and then the program can continue. The last case is the deviant case, and this is the case where, for example, a security bug is exercised or an unexpected feature. So in this case, as a straw man, say that replay tries to execute binsh. Say that somebody managed to get shellcode into the replay because it did not protect properly against something. Now at this point, Tachyon is going to say, well, a read and exec binsh don't look very similar, but I'll ask the rewrite engine, see what it thinks. The rewrite engine, however, is going to come up with no ability to rewrite the stream, and so then we can actually terminate the replay without it having any effect on the system. So I'm going to go over a couple other applications. Patch testing is the main application of this, but there are a couple other things we can do. I'll explain how I set up the interposition. I'll explain the type system, which we use to actually select the inputs and outputs. And then I'll explain how rewriting works and show some basic numbers and both of the in terms of performance and in terms of what we can actually do. And then I'll conclude at that point. So what else can we do with this? So I just went over patch testing a whole bunch. However, we can also do honeypots, debugging. There are other things too that we could probably manage to do with this. So for example, for honeypots, the idea would be you take the patch and you isolate only the security fix portion of it. You do this manually. And then you run the patched version live, so you're safe against this particular bug. And the unpatched is a replay program. Anytime that you're deviating, that means that there is an exploit attempt, because it means they are exercising the difference that in this bit of code that exists as the security fix. So this gives you a honeypot that you don't have to reset the state on. You don't have to worry about it actually managing to get compromised. But at the same time, you will know exactly what would have happened to the unpatched program. Another example is debugging, because we can actually go ahead and record a stream of system calls and replay it later. So you could imagine attaching a stream of system calls to a bug report such that the developers could accurately determine exactly what the trace of execution was without having to try to finagle configuration files and all these other things that are frequently the culprit in making bugs hard to reproduce. So next, I'm going to talk about system call interposition. Basically, this is how we actually manage to isolate the process which we are replaying and how we manage to record what the live process is doing. So some of you earlier when I was showing that diagram might have gotten a little cynical and said, oh, there's lots of other ways the program can communicate. It's not completely isolated if he's only dealing with the system calls. And you would normally be right. But so you can see up there's a lot of ways that the program can normally reach the real world, which is the thing we're trying to isolate it from. So in order to deal with shared memory to the operating system, which is actually commonly used for certain system call acceleration schemes, we actually told the operating system not to let it do that. To avoid shared memory with other programs, since we're already interposing in the system call layer, that is one of the things that we do not allow the program to do. We simply stop them from setting up the shared memory link in the first place. And in terms of, there are some special hardware instructions like RDTSC that reach the real world. We simply disable those because those are not actually commonly required. At that point, we get this version, which looks a lot simpler. We've got things cleanly separated, and system calls are really the only way that things can get out of the program. And then we go ahead and we use ptrace to actually hook Tachyon in to that stream. So ptrace is actually a wonderful tool, somewhat complicated and arcane, but it can actually do a lot of things like break on the next instruction, the next system call, the next fork, and then you can essentially wait on these signals from the program, and then you can mess with the program's internal memory state in between these system calls. So this is essentially a sort of event-based debugging system, would be a way of thinking about it. Unfortunately, the read and write of memory is actually quite slow, and since we have to do that on literally every system call, we actually went ahead and we optimized that a little bit. We added an extension to the Linux kernel that allows you to use mmap on procpidmem to actually map in a remote process's pages so that you can just do a simple copy instead of having to go through layers of indirection. Our interposition, we essentially have a supervisor thread running over each program. If it's a record thread, it allows the program's calls to actually be serviced by the system. And then it sends a system call stream over to the replay thread. The replay thread, every time it sees the system call, actually rewrites it to getpid, which is a fast system call that has no effect on the program, and allows it to do that, and then writes the effects from the record thread into memory in the program, or mutates the registers, or whatever needs to be done to replay those effects. So the next thing that you're probably noticing is that system calls are actually kind of complicated, and how do you know which memory you're copying where? So what we did was we used a type system to actually describe this, and then given the type of a system call described in our system, we can then copy the memory that needs to be copied and get everything where it needs to go. So basic things we want out of this. We want it to be easy, because there are a lot of system calls, and we are going to have to annotate almost all of them. It's going to be a pain if it's even a little bit hard. We want coverage. We want it to be expressive enough that we can actually annotate almost all of the system calls. We want completeness. This means that any information that's being sent back and forth between the real world and the program, we want to be in on that. We want that interposed and recorded. And we want efficiency. We don't want to be including the pointer address. We don't want to include the contents of the buffer when that isn't being used. We don't want to include any of this other stuff. And finally, and this is one of the important things, we want it to be oblivious. It should be outside of the process and not require developer assistance. So it doesn't matter what kinds of shenanigans the program is up to, it can't mess with us. So here's a simple C type. You've probably all seen this function before, but if you actually look at that, there isn't enough information there to actually know what to do about buff. There's simply not enough information in that type. So what we will go ahead and do is we annotate it. So here, you see that we've tagged as output. This means that we're only actually going to bother to copy this when it comes back from the kernel, not when it's going in. And secondly, we've got a size on there, which is actually the return value of read. This means that when the call returns, that's how many bytes from that buffer we should actually be encoding as an effect. However, you probably also know that system calls get more complicated. Here's an example called readv. This is used for scatter gather reads, which is important for efficiency in certain areas of systems. But in this case, what they actually do is they give it a list of buffers, and it writes the result of the read into each of these buffers in turn. This is what this type for that looks like. Now, this is starting to get a little more complicated, but the thing that you are probably realizing is going to be tricky is IOV base. So that particular thing is sized based on IOV len. However, you have the problem that you can't give a concise way of how to find that from the registers that you have to start with, because you don't actually know which index this particular struct is in. So when you're actually describing something that needs to be modular, we are going to need some slightly trickier stuff, which is what that undo self IOV len is there. The rest of it probably looks pretty straightforward from the last example, except for the in-out. That's actually because the IOV len there is used on the input by the kernel to determine how big these buffers are, and on the output is then used again by the program in order to know how much data the kernel put into each of these buffers. So here I've actually gone ahead and diagrammed out what IOV looks like roughly. And we're going to walk through how that sort of undo self IOV len thing works. So initially, we're at IOV base, which means we had to get there somewhere, or somehow. So what we're going to do is we're going to undo whatever the last step was that we did in order to get there. So for example, if we dereferenced a pointer, or if we did an offset from a struct, which is the case here, we go backwards one step. So at that point, we've walked up one step on the tree, and now we're going to walk down the type tree over to IOV len. And now we've actually got the size of that buffer. And so that allows us to express these kinds of more modular structures. So now that we were actually able to capture these streams, We also want to be able to deal with streams that aren't exactly the same. It's probably pretty clear how we'd replay completely identical system call streams, but as I mentioned earlier, there are lots of minor changes that we want to be able to ignore or sort of elide when we're actually doing this replay. So if they do the same thing, say they both do a read of 4096 bytes, we've got this situation where all we need to do is copy the data across and we can let both of these system calls go on their way. However, if we actually go ahead and have a patch involved here, so in this case, say that we've changed the chunk size that it's reading in to be a little smaller, then these two don't match. So we clearly can't just copy the side effects from the first one. So what rewrite rules do is they find a way to modify the live stream to be something that is roughly equivalent such that the call will match. So in this case, what we're going to do is we're going to split the read into two other reads on the live stream and split the data accordingly. So now we can copy the result over and these system calls can move on. Now note that the read 3072 is still in that stream. It's there, which means that the replay program is going to have to keep reading if it wants to match up with the program. So this sort of stream equivalence is how we're actually going to be able to encode some of the more complicated statements about what you can do in terms of moving a system call past another system call or things like this, is that we're actually rewriting a stream on the top rather than just rewriting a single system call at a time. So this is actually basically the rewrite rule that you just saw. This is the implementation. It's quite short. And this is actually one of the more complicated rewrite rules, so they don't actually get that bad. So now I'm actually going to go through some measurement of how effective we were and why each of these things that we did is actually useful. So this here is a list of what I'm calling true deviations, which are essentially bugs where if we do not exercise the bug condition reported there, then we don't see a deviation when we run Tachyon on the new and old versions around those CVEs. If we do exercise the bug condition described in each of these CVEs, then Tachyon does report a deviation, which suggests that it would have been able to correctly terminate execution if we were actually running these in a sort of live environment. One in particular that's interesting is that PHP bug there from 2012 is actually a bug where a patch that was supposed to be a security patch because it stopped the hash table denial of service bug in PHP actually introduced another bug. So in this case, even when you applied that security patch, if you were testing that security patch with Tachyon, you would have known that you were getting exploited when that second bug that came from a security patch actually hit you. So this is a micro benchmark on how fast we can transfer data from process to process. So I mentioned earlier that regular ptrace is actually kind of slow at this. And what you're seeing there is essentially a graph of the amount of extra time it takes us per amount of data that the program attempts to shift around in its system calls. We are actually fairly fast at this now. What you see here is actually about 45 megabytes a second. So this one is actually important in order to show that we're actually able to work live. So this is the overhead in seconds per thousands of system calls that the program actually executed. Now, when you think about it, the most important aspect of a live system is that it's not going to slow down over time or increase its memory footprint or anything like that. Initially, we actually had a slight problem here because the live program would tend to outpace the replayed program. We actually solved this by inserting a bounded queue and having the live program block a little bit if it had too large of a buffer of system calls, if it had outrun the replay program too much. So with both of those, we actually managed to get this completely linear relationship on these system calls where it doesn't matter how long or how many system calls you've made, the program doesn't slow down and it will remain live. So this comparison is against strace, which uses, strace is a tool commonly used by system administrators and programmers to figure out what system calls a particular program is actually making. It essentially just prints them out. So what we did here is we actually are trying to compare against it for the purpose of showing that our access method for data is substantially faster. So what strace does is it has to ask the kernel for some data. The kernel switches to the context of the trace program and copies it from there back to the kernel. Then it switches to your context and copies it back to you. And in fact, strace usually has to do this multiple times, which results in a number of context switches and trips. In our case, since we are actually maintaining a map of the remote program's memory into our own, we just do a simple memcopy. And as a result, on something like Compress, which is extremely I/O intensive, we're actually 14 times faster in terms of extracting data from it. So in terms of one of the other things you're probably wondering about at this point is, how often am I going to need a rewrite rule? How complicated are these going to be? So in order to, and we also want to avoid deviation reports and thus having to write a rewrite rule when there's not a real deviation. So what we did for that was we tested 207 patches to core utils. The 207 looks like a funny number, but that's just because that was how far back the build system didn't change for purposes of automating the experiment. And two out of our 1,656 runs had some deviation reported, and both of them were rewritable. One was a buffer size change, which required a write split, which is basically the same thing as the read split that I just showed you guys earlier. And the other one had an fadvise call added, which we simply told it to ignore. So in general, these patches, especially for small patches, are not actually going to have deviations show up in terms of what system calls they're doing, because we're completely agnostic to memory layout and all of those other wonderful things. So unfortunately, there are a couple limitations. At the moment, it only runs on Linux. But in theory, this technique should be portable to any environment where the system call interface with the kernel is known. The reason that we have to have that interface there is because we're essentially working with potentially crazy programs that are going to do things like manually make system calls or not go through the libraries or things like that. We want to ensure that it's actually isolated. No shared memory to the outside world. This is a potentially solvable problem, but a massive engineering feat. There's some stuff in deterministic multiprocessing that actually has the beginnings of solutions to this. In addition, we would like more consistency on the internal shared memory, because we are allowing shared memory between processes and threads running within the programs that we're supervising. We managed to essentially make sure that they get scheduled in the same order between system calls, which keeps most of the consistency there, but more consistency would be good. And we also currently don't have support for system calls using kernel shared memory. There's no reason why this can't exist. It's simply that the ptrace interface as it stands does not allow for hooking that type of system call. So what we end up doing instead is we end up just disabling it. So there's also some good related work in R2. They take a similar approach, but they work with a cut across a program rather than with a system call barrier directly. And their type system provides slightly different properties such that we actually couldn't use it for our work. It also requires cooperation from the developer, whereas we are actually able to deal with a essentially completely aloof developer who does not want to help us. There's a bunch more in the paper, but R2 is probably the closest work. So in conclusion, we run correctly on a large variety of complex software, so like PHP is generally considered to be a fairly large piece of software. We have efficient replay of the processes, and we allow safe testing of the patches with reduced overhead, increased confidence, and a low false positive rate. Thank you to our shepherd, Sam King, and the anonymous reviewers. Does anyone have any questions?
Any questions? Anyone? So I'll ask a quick question.
Sure.
So for me personally, I often delay installing my patches, not because I'm worried that they're buggy, but because they require me to restart my laptop, which I don't really want to do. So do you have any evidence or some numbers on how many patches out there are really buggy, and what's the reason people don't install them?
So this is not generally targeted at home users who tend to have these reasons like reboots for not installing patches. But if you've ever seen any sort of an enterprise or large organization that actually has to deploy servers and things like this, they are generally hesitant to upgrade anything, regardless of what the patch is for, whether it claims to be a feature fix or a security fix. And essentially, this is not necessarily targeted at the home user, though they could use it, and is more targeted at these large business organizations that actually need to make sure that all of their software is doing exactly what it was doing yesterday.
Paul Miller, Microsoft. When you have programs that are actually using randomized algorithms, are you actually able to feed both mirrors a consistent random number generator so that they don't deviate?
Yes, actually, that was one of the fun toys that I did when I was demoing this tool with my advice earlier on, is both programs were calling rand, but they were getting the same numbers every time. And the way that this is actually working is that any random number generator has to acquire its entropy somewhere, whether this be from the alpha auxiliary vector, or whether this be from calling time, or whether this be from reading devu random. And it turns out that I can intercept all of these things and make sure that essentially the auxv is just make sure that their initial program image has that copied across the read from devu random. As you saw, we would replay that anyway, so their seed would be the same. And if they call time, I give them the same response because that's also a system call.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
You mentioned that a disabled RDTSC. So how, and if you didn't want to do it, what options do you have?
So it turns out the CPU just has an option for doing that. It's nothing fancy that I wrote or anything. If we didn't do that, the only real option we would have would be low-level instruction tracing if we wanted to guarantee that they were actually doing the same thing, because otherwise the program could essentially fingerprint our presence based on RDTSC and exhibit different behavior. Whereas the way that we were doing it now, the replayed program should not be able to tell that it is in a different universe from the live program.
Thank you.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.